with that.
So Parshas Shmini, the third Aliyah of Parshas Shmini, is a tragic Aliyah. It's a very difficult story, an extremely difficult story, and we can't really do it justice in terms of the time frame that we have today. We'll just say a little bit about it. The extremely tragic story of Nadav Avihu, of the passing of the sons of Aaron, that the Aliyah tells us that the Aliyah begins, "Vatetze Eish Mufne Hashem V'Toychal Mizbech Esaola V'Yesa Chalavim V'Yar Kolam V'Yaronu V'Yipu Al Pneihem." So we have fire coming from before God. Then the pasuk continues, "Vayichu Bnei Aaron Nadav Yaviu Ish Machtaso V'Yidnu V'Hen Eish V'Yasimu Ola Ketores V'Yakrivu Lufnei Hashem Eish Zara Asher Lo Tziva Osam." That here you have fire coming down from Shemayim. And the brothers, Nadav and Avihu, they bring their own fire, which the Torah calls a strange fire, Eish Zara, Asher Lo Tziva Osam, that they were not commanded to do. And then the tragedy happens in the next pasuk, Vatese Eish Mlefnei Hashem, the fire came out, Vatochel Osam, Vyamus Lefnei Hashem. And they were consumed, as Rashi explains, they were consumed internally, their bodies were complete, but there was an internal burning up. And they died. So this is obviously a tremendous tragedy, and it's a topic that Chazal talk about at length in many different ways. What exactly was the Aveira? Why should this have happened to Nadav and Avihu, who are otherwise understood as tzaddikim? So what exactly was wrong about it? What exactly was so terrible about what they did? So there are many, many suggestions in Chazal, just to mention, not even all of them, not even just to list them, just to zero in on two or three of them. So the Gemara Maseches Erev and Adav Samach Gimel says that they were in violation of Shahora Halacha B'fnei Rabo, that they paskined on their own. What did they paskin? They decided that even though there was fire coming down from Shemayim, as the Pesuk in detail, but they felt you still have to bring Eish Menahedjo, still a human being, has to bring the fire onto the Mizbeach, and that's what they did. And the truth is, the psak seems to be correct. That is the din. But nonetheless, apparently they were still guilty of being mora halacha b'fnei rabo, the din in Shulchan Aruch and Yerideya and Reish Men Beis. Seems to tell us that that is still a violation of mora halacha b'fnei rabo. It's not a question of whether the din is correct or not. It's a prohibition regardless. It's the act of psak is the prohibition. The Torah Tamima comments, though, that he thinks actually Lamais, it happens to be the Psak, was wrong. He goes into a whole complicated explanation why. The fact is the Torah does call it an Eish Zara, a strange fire. The Maharal, and the Gur Aryeh, the Maharal understands that the reason the Torah calls it an Eish Zara is that even though it would have been correct, but because of the Mora Halacha B'fnei Rabo, it's considered to be an Eish Zara, and the Nassan Gishtetner and the Laharus Nassan Ala Torah. So he discusses how the psak creates a reality, and that even though this would have been the correct hanhaga, but the act of psak b'fnei rabo, paskening in front of one's rabbi, that gave it a status of Eish Zara that it wouldn't have had otherwise. Now that itself is a very striking idea. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, and after Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara has an idea that's also very difficult to understand, and many mafarshim suggest that it should be understood differently, but it sounds like they wanted stature, that they wanted to be leaders, that the Gemara quotes them as saying, "Amasa yamusu shnei hazakenim ha'elu v'aniva ata nanigas ador." When's it going to happen that these old people, they're going to die and you and I will take over? When's that going to happen? It sounds like they were anticipating it, and Rashi says that they desired leadership and Rabbanus, they wanted prominence. Obviously, it's a very difficult idea to understand. There's much written, the Chassam Sofer and others have many very involved interpretations of what exactly is meant to be understood from that phrase. Hopefully, it's not like it sounds. They just wanted power, they wanted authority, and they were anticipating the death of their family members so that that could be. It's hard to see it that way. The Ksav Sofer has a fascinating interpretation, which is a more specific version of the idea that many Meforshim have here. That many Meforshim note that especially from the pasuk, the idea of Eish Zara. There is a lot of discussion about why it is that Chazal in so many places have so many different theories as to what they did wrong, when it doesn't seem like you have to really look too far. That the Torah does say Eish Zara, that there was an act that was not commanded, that was the Avera, and yet Chazal seemed to feel a need to flesh that a little bit more. Rebbe Kamenetsky suggests in his commentary to Chumash that the thread between all of the explanations is that they were haughty, that they had a gasas ruach, that they felt that they knew how to do things better than Moshe Rabbeinu, that they could rule on their own, and the reason they felt that is because they had doubts about Moshe's leadership. They thought they were more qualified, they thought they were more understanding of the halacha, and that's what brought about this Eish Zara, which ultimately is not something that God commanded. Back of notes also the idea that they were drunk, that they drank, so they didn't yet have a prohibition to drink. That comes at the end of this aliyah, the prohibition to drink. But still, you would think that if they were appropriately nervous, they wouldn't choose to drink this day. That itself is perhaps an indication, not necessarily of an isser, but of an attitude of overconfidence. So he suggests this is a thread that's going through everything, and many mafarshim point out that this is something that Rosh Yeshiva Karen Biavner Goldberg has a lengthy essay about in the Asufas Marachos, and this is an idea, Rabbi Baruch Simon has an essay about this in the beginning of his essays in Parsha Shemini, and this is a notion that we find in many places of the Torah, this being a very major example of it, that we are instructed not to make our own rules in terms of spirituality, not to decide, well, we're looking for our own spiritual high and that's going to dictate what we're going to do. But we have God's directives, we have mitzvot. Many suggest that that was the whole issue with the Egel Hazav, which the Mishkan was davka supposed to be a kapara for. That this goes back to the Nachash and Gan Eden, that we're not supposed to look for our own understanding of what is spiritual, what is uplifting, but that God's command defines what is spiritual. So here, Eish Zara Sherlo Tziva Hashem is the heart of the matter. The Ksav Sofer has a fascinating extension of this idea. He has a notion which is a version really of the same thought. And the Ksav Sofer notes that on the one hand, Chazal say that they had this comment, when are the Zakenim going to die and we'll take over? There's another statement in Chazal that they chose not to marry and have kids. And the Ksav Sofer suggests, fascinating comment, that he thinks that these two ideas are related. That they looked at their elders, they looked at Moshe and Aaron, and here Moshe was the Gadol Hador of all history, and it doesn't seem like he had such success with his children, and they assumed that, oh, he's very prominent in communal affairs, so he's very successful in that area, so he's not able to have so much involvement with his kids, and that causes problems over there. And Aaron was more successful with his children, with them, and same time, he's less prominent than Moshe Rabbeinu, so it seems like it's somewhat of a trade-off, that either you're going to be very prominent in communal leadership, and you're not going to be such a successful father, or you'll be a very successful father, and you won't be so successful in communal leadership. That's how they perceived it, as somewhat of a trade-off. So therefore, the Ksav Sofer understands that when they said, Masa Yamusu, Shnei Zakenim Ha'ilu, Nivata, Nanhigis Ador, it's not so much that they were hoping for that to happen soon, it's that they were envisioning the fact that the time will come that they're going to be in a position of communal leadership, they're going to be the ones who are in charge, and apparently you have to pick, it's either a family or the community, and it's not going to be possible to succeed in both. So therefore they chose not to marry, they chose not to have kids, because they anticipated this communal prominence. And to that, as the Ksav Sofer notes, the response is the often cited passage in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos and Daf Yud, where the Gemara tells us that Chizkiyahu was sick and Yeshayahu was brought to visit him, and Yeshayahu told him he's in trouble because he chose not to have children. And Chizkiyahu said that I had a reason to not have kids, that I anticipated, I saw Baruch HaKodesh, that the kids I would have would not be upstanding, would not be worthy children. So to that, Yeshayahu gives the response, "Bahadei kashay derachmana olam locha," that it's not your job to figure out God's secrets, that's not what it's about. You have to do what you're commanded to, and you can't make such cheshbonos. And so Sav Sofer suggests that's what's going on here as well, that you have mitzvos, so that it's your job to try to perform the mitzvos and to figure out how you can make it work within that framework. But for them to be cheshboning, well, we can't be communal leaders who are successful if we're also going to fulfill our responsibility towards family. That's not the attitude to take. The attitude to take is that you have a chiyuv here of pruvu, that becomes your, that's your obligation, and God's job is to figure out how everything will be balanced, and you do the best within that. So it's a fascinating interpretation, but it's also a part of this whole idea that there is a mitzvah structure, and that's what seems to dictate. In any event, so then the aliyah continues to be difficult as it goes on. It's difficult emotionally. It's difficult just in terms of understanding what's going on. The next pasuk says, "V'yomer Moshe Aaron, Hu Asher Diber Hashem Lemor Bekavai Echadesh V'Alpnei Kolam Echabed V'Yidom Aaron." That Moshe says, oh, this is what I expected. This is what God said, that I'm going to sanctify my name through those who are close to me. Well, what does that mean? It's a Tartamima comment. It's very hard to understand what exactly Moshe is getting at, that he anticipated this, he knew this was going to happen, and especially if Chazal are telling us that Nadav and Avihu were guilty of something, so then what's the idea here that he's conveying? So he suggests the Torah Tamima that Moshe's point is that he knew that this theme would have to be emphasized. That, maybe we'll return to this in a few minutes, that the Mishkan is Mechaper. So one might think, okay, so if the Mishkan is Mechaper, so then I don't have to be so careful anymore. I don't have to avoid doing Averis in the first place, because the Mishkan will take care of everything after the fact. And that's not the attitude. The attitude of Mishkan is Mechaper B'shogeg. But one still has to assert the proper responsibility for one's actions. So Moshe was saying that he knew that it was going to happen, that there was going to be a need to establish that one can't be careless now because there's a Mishkan, and that that was going to come out in public, that all the more so because there is a Mishkan, one doesn't have the right to absolve themselves of responsibility of doing things in the proper fashion. And I think the point that connects to other things this week will... and we come back to that point in a few minutes. The Torah Tamimu also comments on the next pasuk, on the next part of the pasuk, at the end of the pasuk, the very famous line that Aaron was silent, Vayidom Aaron, in the face of this tremendous tragedy. So he's silent, which is interpreted in different ways. That means he's speechless in the sense that we sometimes experience, that somebody just is so stunned by the tragedy, so traumatized, he can't speak. Or is this a statement of his emunah, that he didn't complain, he didn't raise up an attack against the Kodesh Baruch Hu and say, God's not fair, but he was silenced in the absence of complaint, in the absence of tainis against God. So the Torah Tamima suggests that he thinks that this is pshat in the Gemara, and he said this, that there is a Gemara in the first parak of Brachos, where the Gemara talks about the reward that you get for various mitzvos. Agra, the reward of this is that, and the reward doesn't tell you what the reward is, it tells you how the reward is measured, that for every act, so the extent to which you try, the extent to which you accomplish, that's the basis that you get for a reward. So one of the things that Gemara has there is Agra, Debei, Tamya, Shtika, that the reward that one gets for the house of mourning, so what apparently Beit Tamya means, is based on the silence. That's a very difficult idea to understand. Why should you be rewarded for silence? The Gemara has other things, Agra de Shmaisa Svara, that the reward one gets for learning is the logical effort, the Agra de Pei Pirka Duchka, that one gets a reward for going to Shir because he squeezes himself into the space. You know, the Gemara talks about the effort that's relevant to the mitzvah. So how is shtika relevant to the mitzvah of going to a Beis Avelim? In fact, you would say it's just the opposite, that many poskim hold that if you go to a Beis Avel and you don't say anything, you just show up, that that's an incomplete mitzvah, that the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim requires you to actually say things. In the Temani practice, actually, the environment of the Shiva house is complete silence, and it's better than the other extreme. Sometimes you have a shiva house, an environment where it's really not conducive to the spirit of the avelus at all. But what seems to be halachically required is that there should be conversation that's relevant. There should be michum avelum happening. And in fact, this phrase, Beitamya, Rashi explains in Masechet Sanhedrin that Beitamya is called, the house of avelus is called Beitamya, Shemat'imen oso bedvarim, that they give a sense, they give a taste, they give meaning to things through speaking to the avel. So it sounds like Davka, that's the whole point, that there should be conversation, and that that's even what gives the place its name. So if that's the case, it's hard to understand why the Gemara says that we praise Shtika as the quality. It's a very difficult Gemara. So the Torah Tumimah here says on this Pasuk, as many do, that maybe it's not talking about the Menachemim, it's talking about the Avel, that the Avel is able to be silent in the face of great tragedy. This baffling event that he can't explain and doesn't seem fair, so he's still able to maintain his silence and not to complain against God. So that's what the Gemara means. It's talking about the Vayidom Aaron of this Pasuk. I thought you could say a different explanation as well. So you could say that maybe it is talking about the Menachemim, that they should be credited for their silence. So again, the question is, so what about their chiyuv to be speaking, Nicham Avelim? So there is a halacha that is very much neglected nowadays, but it's a real din, as a Gemara, as a din in Shulchan Aruch, that when one comes to a shiva house, the din is Ein ha Avelim, Ein ha Menachemim, Rishayim ledaber, Ad sheyiftach ha'avel tchila, that the comforters, the Menachemim, shouldn't talk until the Avel speaks first. And that's halacha. It's not very much observed nowadays, and it should be. It's a real din. It's a part of what's complicated. Somebody's not able to get to a shiva house in person, so they try to do it over the phone, the whole discussion about Bikur Cholim over the phone, Nicham Avelim over the phone. So some suggest a difference between the two, that when it comes to Nicham Avelim, it's difficult because you have this halacha of you're not supposed to speak until the Avel speaks first. And when you call somebody up, it's very hard to fulfill that din. So there are some svarim that suggest that that's what the Gemara is talking about. When it says, Agri de Beitam Yishtika, it means that waiting for the Avel to speak first, that's the schar that one gets for the Nicham Avelim. So that's also hard to understand because that's such an obscure din that that should be the barometer by which the whole mitzvah is measured. It's not also not in sync with the rest of the statements in the Gemara. They're going to take some obscure detail of this mitzvah and say that that's what we'll use to assess how successful you are in Nicham Avelim, seems to be a difficult idea to understand. And perhaps you could suggest that there is a whole range of interpretations as to why you have such a concept. Why should the Avel speak first? And some suggest that the idea is that if you come into the base Avel and you have a prepackaged speech that you give to every Avel that you say right away, so then that's not going to be an effective Nicham Avelim either. Then in order for the Nicham Avelim to be effective, it has to be targeted towards the emotional state of the person who you're talking to. It has to be tailored towards the needs of that person. So you have to listen first before you start speaking. So the Avelim should not speak until the Avel says something, and then the Menachemim can get a sense of where the Avel is at, and then they'll know what to say. Then they'll have a sense of how to respond appropriately. So the Gemara is saying, Agra de Beitam Yishtika, that the success of the Yichem Avelim, the whole measurement of whether it was an accomplishment or not, can be assessed based on whether they are careful to listen first and to properly calibrate the remarks they have based on what the Avel is requiring at that time. Hi.
When we say Achi Yiftach, does that mean the Avel Davka has to be talking to you, or once we see him talking?
That's the whole discussion in Poskim, so it's going to depend on the time. Once you figure out what this din is about, then you can know how to apply it. They talk about it, whether it's once a day, or once per person, or once per session, or what counts. And there's a pretty extensive discussion about it in the Poskim about how to apply this din, but presumably it's will correlate to how you understand it. It's interesting also in the context of Eidam Aaron, which we also mentioned, that there are some who say that that's the reason for this din, to kind of combine the two pshatim about the Agri Debe Tam Yishtika, that the reason the Avel has to talk first is, especially they used to have Hanhaga like this that was a little bit more explicit, is that before the Avel can receive the Tanchumen, he first has to do Tzidik Adin. He first has to acknowledge God's justice. That's the purpose of Kaddish, other types of recitations that we have. So that has to take place first. So then it's not really talking about every single Menachem who comes. It means that at the beginning of the day, or whatever it is, the Avel says something to acknowledge God's justice. So that would be also correlating to Vayidom Aaron in the affirmative sense, that Aaron is credited with, that's how we read the Pasuk, as not saying anything. Maybe it means not saying anything that is an attack against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But either way, it's interesting that here the Torah does say Vayidom Aaron, and we do have this idea of the Gemara saying that Agra Beitanya Shtika, so we have to figure out exactly what it means, but there is such a notion. So the idea that some have today, I really don't understand, that they object to the siren on Yom HaZikaron, and they say that to stop and give a moment of silence, that that's somehow not a Jewish practice, that it has a Chukas HaAkum component to it. For a lot of reasons, I find that objection very hard to understand, but especially the idea that silence in the face of loss is not a Jewish response. I'm not sure why you would say that. I mean, again, you could talk about what's the exact intent of this pasuk, or what's the exact intent of that Gemara, but there clearly is a role of silence in association with loss, and to say that a moment of silence for the siren is somehow not a Jewish practice, I don't really understand that. But in any event, so then the psukim go on, and the family of Aaron is instructed, Moshe tells Aaron and Elazar and Isamar, that they should not take on the practices of mourning, that because they are obligated to stay functioning in the Mishkan, so therefore they shouldn't do what they would normally do. So what shouldn't they do? Rasheichem al tifrau, uvideichem lo sifromu velo samusu, that they shouldn't let their hair grow long, or wild, however you want to translate that pasuk, and they should not have their clothes torn up, and they won't die. So you have to figure out what all that means. This idea, Rasheich and Atifro, so the Gemara Moed Katan says that this is the marker for Avelos Shloshim. How do you get Shloshim here? Because there's a Gzeir Shava from this pasuk to Nazirus. Nazirus, as we discussed in other contexts, down Nazirus is 30 days. So the Gemara suggests this is the marker for Avelos Shloshim. The Rambam in Hilchas Avel, in Perek Vav, he quotes a different pasuk. He quotes a pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Kisese, which talks about the Eishes Sifas Torah. And there the pasuk says, "Uvachsas avi avi asima yerach yamim." So it's a question why the Rambam has his own pasuk. So the Torah Tzimim has a comment over. He says that either way, the pasuk is an asmachta. This is not a din min haTorah. The idea of Avel Shloshim is not a din min haTorah one way or another. Various reasons why it doesn't seem like it could be. So therefore, you have to assume that it's an asmachta one way or another. So when the Rambam's going to quote the support, he'll quote the pasuk that is closer in spirit to what we actually do, not the complicated Gzeirah Shavah that no one's going to know what that means, but the pasuk that talks about the ubachsa, talks about crying for a parent for a month. So that's a much more direct understanding of what the Shloshim is about. And this is also, once you pick that pasuk, so then it just talks about general mourning, so it's able to be inclusive of the other Nihuge Avelis and not just what's specifically alluded to in this pasuk. There's a lot to talk about in terms of this focus on the one hand, this talking about growing your hair long, and on the other hand, about tearing Kriya. So Rashi has a comment on this pasuk about growing your hair long. So Rashi says, "Al tegadlu seir mikan she avel aser b'tisboras." This tells you, by inference, that an avel is not allowed to cut his hair. The aval atem al ta'arvu simcha shel makom, but you should not confuse the simcha of the miluim, and you should not engage in that practice. But he doesn't talk about the other part of the pasuk about not tearing your clothes. It sounds like he's only focused on growing your hair. And the Ramban Taka holds, we'll talk about this in a second, that that tearing your clothes is an asmachta, and that it's a dindrabanan to do kriya, which was my focus. We'll talk about it in a second. So just to mention, yesterday somebody came into the Beis Medrash and he was selling a Sfarim pamphlet. If you saw, I came to the back of the Beis Medrash, he was selling a pamphlet on Vayikra called Ner B'Tzel. So he happens to have a discussion on this pasuk, and he notes that the idea that there's more of a focus on the growing hair than on the tearing clothes in this pasuk, and the Rashi's interpretation of this pasuk seems to address them equally, but Rashi is focusing on one, says there's really two different types of nihugei avelus. That tearing your clothes, that's a way of showing kavod to the mace, of showing that things are not beseder. So that's really an act of honor for the mace. While long hair, that's about discomfort. The person should feel itchy and scratchy and ungroomed, so that's more an aspect of tsar. So from the pasuk, it's hard to know which one is really about telling them not to do avelus, because telling them to have clean clothes or untorn clothes, that might just be because of the kavod of the Beis HaMishkan, of the Mishkan specifically, which may be its own din in itself. But the idea of telling them not to have tsar, that was the direct contradiction to avelus, and maybe that's why the focus is a little bit different. But in any event, there is a discussion about whether kriya is daraisa or derabanan, which connects to this pasuk. It sounds a little bit like one could derive from here that kriya is a chiyuv daraisa, and it sounds like that from the Gemara of Moed Katan. And it says that one who doesn't tear kriya is a chayv misa. It's very strong statements about not tearing kriya. But the Ramban, in his comment over there, in Mars Moed Katan Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, and also in his Sefer Torah Sa'adam, so the Ramban says this is an asmachta because kriya is a drabanan, it's a chiyuv drabanan. The Ravid, however, says it's daraisa. And as the Torah Tamima notes, it seems to be it's a machlokus about how to read the pasuk. When it says, "Velo yamusu," and you won't die, so what's it saying? It's saying that you don't have to do kriya? In other words, kriya is normally an option, or it's saying that you shouldn't do kriya? Kriya is normally a chiyuv. And here you're being told that you shouldn't because it's a stira to the covenant of the Mishkan. So is the pasuk basically saying that people would tend to do kriya at such a time? Or is it saying there's normally a chi of kriya? And that perhaps is a machlokas interpretation of the pasuk. So the Torah Tzimah goes on to say that it seems like you have to say, you could have brought a raya perhaps, that kriya is daraisa, based on the comment of Rebbeinu Peretz, quoted by the Smag, that deals with the question of why is it not bal tashlis? How come you're able to tear a garment? Don't want to be worried about the issur daraisa of bal tashlis. So he has a lashon there that the chi of kriya comes in his docha, the isser baltashlis. So it sounds like that there's a mitzvah daraisa that comes and outweighs the isser of baltashlis. However, as Torah Tzimah goes on to note, that's not conclusive. And the Gemara does say in Bava Kama Daf Sadi Aleph that if somebody tears yosur midai, if somebody tears too much, it is baltashlis. So it sounds like you need a real chi of to justify the baltashlis issue. But it can't be, he says, that it has to be a chi of daraisa because we have other kriyas which are not connected to this pasuk. So, for example, the Gemara says is kriya, all the Gemaras are over there in Moed Katan. Kriya, b'shasti, tzias haneshama, if somebody's not related to the person, but he's present at the time when somebody dies. Or kriya for a sefer Torah that falls, so or a sefer Torah that's burnt, the Gemara talks about. So these are kriyas drabanan, and clearly there's no real source in the Torah for this. And yet, apparently, it's mutter. You could have a kriya that's drabanan, but don't assume that it's automatically bal tashlis. So he discusses why that is, and it's a little bit of synergy to Shabbos and Bracha Shinashrichu L'gufa, we spoke about a little bit yesterday. At the Rambam, in the Mishnayos in the 10th parak of Shabbos, in the Ha'oreh, so the Rambam explains that when somebody tears kriya, so that's a productive act, because it helps them to deal with their emotions. It helps them to cool off from the heat of grief. So, therefore, that's a productive act, so that's why it's not bal tashlis, regardless of whether it's a chi of daraisa or not. So I saw that my grandfather, in his commentary to the Torah Tamima on the bottom, he gives him a hard time about this because he thinks he's confusing two different dinim. But the Gemara talks about it in the context of Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, that you might think that kriya should not be asur on Shabbos with the chi of, because it's destructive, it's makalkel, so why should it be chiyuv? So apparently, no, it's considered to be a constructive act because it has this accomplishment for one's emotions. So you might think that, okay, so then that's what justifies it, so that's why it's not bal tashlis. So my grandfather gives a hard time about this, but he says it's confusing two different dinim, that malachat shricha legufa, and Sarach HaAdam for Baal Tashlis, there are two different concepts. So My instinct is to think that Torah Tumim is simply saying, but that shows you that it's productive, and it's productive, so it's not Baal Tashchis. So I assume the objection, Mitzvah L'Kayim, is objection, I think his objection probably is, that Baal Tashchis can be mutter l'tzarach ha'adam, but it's not automatically mutter for every tzarach ha'adam. It's got to be that it could be economically justified, that if you get more value out of doing this than the garment is worth, so then the tzarach is not a violation of Baal Tashchis. But just because it's productive, if it's not productive enough to justify the loss of valuable property, so then that's not necessarily automatically a heter for Baal Tashchis. In any event,
But even, let's say, the Rabbanan ones that the Moedkadans list, let's say, if you're B'Shas, Tzitzis, and Shabbos, you should be making that cheshbon every time, basically?
Whether it's Baal Tashchis? No, because that would be a din. And nowadays, the question how often we actually do that, which is a different discussion. But to say that is it cheshbon, is this worth more than my garment? And presumably not, because it's a din the Rabbanan to do it. But the question is, right, but the question, what the Torah Tumim, I think, is, and what my grandfather's objection, I think, is that the fact that there's some benefit to your emotional state by doing this doesn't automatically justify the Baal Tashchis. You'd have to evaluate that the benefit to your emotional state is worth enough that it justifies this. And that when the Rambam says that in Malach Shin Shif L'Gufa, so it means, okay, so it's not Mekalkel, it's a positive act. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not Baal Tashchis. Okay, so most poskim hold it's the Rabbanan, as the Torah Tumim goes on to note, that what's not addressed by the poskim is a chakira one could ask, that is it a din in the kriya, or is it a din in begadim kruim, which would have a nafkamina if somebody has clothes that are already torn. So should we say he doesn't have to tear more, he just wears the torn clothes, that's enough, which is relevant also to this whole discussion about do we say that the issue here was the stira to the covet of the Mishkan, that you shouldn't have torn clothes there, and that's what this whole din is about, or is it about the kriya itself? So he notes that the Rambam, it sounds like, the one we just mentioned, it sounds like it's the kriya itself. It's not just that you should have torn clothes, but it's that you should do the act of kriya, because the act of kriya is a correlation to the tzar. So this also has a little bit of relevance that we mentioned a few minutes ago, the question of what is the purpose of kriya? Is kriya somehow related to tzar, or is it an act of kavanah meis, that there should be torn clothing, the avel should be sitting there in torn clothes, and that's a way of making the statement that everything is not okay, everything is not normal. In any event, so we won't spend much more time on this, we'll talk about other things, but the Aliyah ends off with the prohibition of drinking wine and doing the avoda. The Gemara says that it has to be wine, the asli day shichris, which means that it's not diluted, it's not over a long period of time, but it's done in a way that's going to bring about intoxication. And the Gemara has a discussion that this, the Torah says that this is relevant to Lahoros in terms of paskening. So there's a discussion about what are you allowed to learn when you're drinking. Are you allowed to learn Mishnayos? Are you allowed to learn Gemara? If it's far enough from Halacha L'maisa, you're allowed to drink it when you're allowed to learn it while you're drinking. So I remember Shechta told a story once that he was giving a shir somewhere, and there was another shir being given by a chassidish or Rosh Hashiva, and Shechta declined an offer of a drink beforehand because he said he's about to give a shir. And the other Hashiva who was present, he did drink. So they asked him, how come you took a drink and Rosh Hashiva didn't drink a drink? So this Hashiva commented that when Rosh Hashiva gives the shirim, so he quotes all the poskim, he tells you all the dinim halacha l'maisa, so he has a din, he's not allowed to drink, and it's shasiol should not be mora halacha, but his shirim are more abstract, so it's okay for him to drink, it's not going to be too relevant to halacha l'maisa. Okay, but in any event, so just to say a few words about parah, and then we will quickly go over at least one of the topics. So when it comes to Parshas Parah, so I think we alluded to, last week was Parshas Zachar, and we said that that's conventionally understood, that Parshas Parah is Daraisa, and it's usually assumed that only Zachar is Daraisa, that no other Kriyas HaTorah over the course of the year is Mahatorah. But Parshas Parah, you do find some of the Rishon in the beginning of the second parak of Brachos, Rash and others, do seem to mention Parshas Parah as possibly being Daraisa. So it's not clear where in the Torah it says that Parshas Parah should be Daraisa. When it comes to Amalek, last week we saw there's some debate to be had about how clearly the Chiyuv evolves into a Chiyuv with a Sefer Torah, with a minyan on the Shabbos before Purim. But the mitzvah, at least, we see is clearly in the Torah of Zachar, Asher, Asalacha, Amalek. But the idea that par is deraisa is not so clear. And there were some who said that the Rishon who have it in the second parak of Brachos, that really it's a typo, that really they said pay, and that we interpreted it as parshas para. It says zocher v'pei, and really it meant to say v'parshas purim, that the Yavo Amalek, the laying down on purim, was the same topic of Amalek. Maybe all of that they were saying is a chiyuv deraisa, but not to include parshas para. Shechter's mentioned he doesn't find that very convincing, that you find this in a lot of Rishonim, and it's hard to imagine that it's a typo. So you have to figure out what exactly is the source of this idea that parah should be a deraisa. So the Meshech Chachma says that it's based on the pasuk v'izartim b'sfenei shachrit tumasim. You have to separate the Jews from tuma, so therefore the zechir to have a public laning about the concerns of tuma v'tara, and that's what parshas parah is coming to address. Others point out that the language in the pasuk of leimor that this should be said. The Arachayim suggests on that pasuk that that's a remnant to the idea that parshas para is daraisa. Some understand it in the sense of we've talked about a few times recently about neshama parim swasein, that in this door where we don't have korbanos, so we have a greater field to learn about the korbanos, and especially when it comes to the parshas para, because this concept is supposed to be around forever. The kapara of the para dumosa, what about during the times we know the Beis HaMikdash? So then the idea of learning about it becomes even more obligatory, and perhaps Parshas Para is deraisa for that reason. But you could also explain it a different way, that the Malbim and the Urukis Abosim and a few others have an explanation, an interesting idea that you have a shidduch you can make, that here you have a din without a makar, it's not clear where this comes from. And you also have a mucker without a practice. That one of the zechiros, according to the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, one of the zechiros is to remember the Maisa Ha'egel. So the Maisa Ha'egel, if that's a chiyuv to remember it, the pasuk says, Zachar, Zashari, Zafta, Sashem Lokecha, Bamidbar, we should remember how we angered God. So when do we do that? We don't ever fulfill that mitzvah. We have a Shabbos Parsha Zachar. We don't have a Shabbos Parsha Sa'igo. So some suggest that Parsha's Para is that Zechira, that we want to remember the Ego, but the episode of the Ego is an embarrassment for us, it's a bizayon. So we take a more positive way of doing it. So since we know Rashi quotes the idea that the Para Duma is a Kapara for the Ego Hazav, we say, let the mother come and clean up after the mess that was done by the child. So therefore, we choose the more positive version, the kapara, as a way to remember it. So that's an interesting idea, that this could correlate to the idea that if the message is that tshuva is always possible, which could be the message of the Egel Hazav, that's what Kumar says in one place, that the whole episode of the Egel Hazav was there, Kidei Lahoris Tshuva L'Rabim, in order to teach the world how tshuva is possible on a mass level. So then we could say, so we want to focus on the tshuva, we don't want to focus on the Avera, so we have the more inspiring episode of Parah Aduma as a stand-in for the Maisa Ha'Egel. But others understand the purpose of Maisa Ha'Egel as a remembrance is not about the tshuva, but it's more as a warning, that we should know that we can always stumble, even when you're in a very high madrega, and you're coming out of Yisias Mitzrayim and not Torah, and you think you're at the highest spiritual level, it's still possible to stumble. And therefore, we have to remember that with this warning of the para of the Egel Hazav. So does the Parah Aduma really accomplish that? So you could suggest that it does accomplish that, because the idea, the famous paradox of the Parah Aduma, that it's Matar Tamei and Matami Tahorim, that it brings Tuma and Tara at the same time. So everyone asks, how can such a paradox exist? So perhaps the message is the same message, that you might think, okay, this is a Tahor activity, it should all be about Tara. Shouldn't have any danger associated with it, shouldn't have to think at all. And the message is no, but even when you're involved with Kedusha, even when you're involved with holy things, it's still very possible to make a mistake. It's still very possible to stumble badly. And therefore, you can't just say, I'm on autopilot, I'm involved with Tara, nothing can go wrong. But you have to have the realization that this could go wrong as well, and therefore the Parah Aduma really does symbolize the same problem that Egel HaZav has, and like we mentioned before, perhaps that's also the message of Nadav and Avihu. That's what Moshe was saying, that one couldn't take the attitude, okay, I'm involved in Mishkan, everything's fine now, because this is all about Kedusha, I can't do anything wrong. All the more so there is a responsibility to have an attitude of carefulness and awareness. Just to very quickly talk a little bit about Shlam Shasol, give you a little bit of the highlights. Make sure you scroll up to our, okay. So just to give a couple of highlights about that there is a discussion to be had. The Gemara says, just hit the highlights very quickly. The Gemara says that there is this exemption in Hilchos Shabbos if two people do a malacha together. We find it in the context of Hotzah and a few other places. If two people do a malacha together, so there is a p'tur. And we raise the question in general, what's the nature of the p'tur? Is the p'tur because we can't blame any one person because the two people are doing it together? Or is it a p'tur because the ma'isa is insufficient? If the ma'isa is being done by two people instead of one, so then there's something lacking in the ma'isa and there's no chiyuv for that reason. And we spoke about the fact that it is a machlokas in the Gemara. We assume that the p'tur applies only when you have two people who could do the job by themselves. So then they artificially do it together, then there's a p'tur. But there's an opinion of Gemara that even two people who can't do it by themselves, if they do it together, is pater. And there's a whole discussion what exactly the source for all of these dinim would be. And it sounds like Gemara has it from a pasuk in Parshas Vayikra, Vayichatas. And Rashi throws in the idea of Orachayu, that if you're going to do it this way, it's not kederach. So we discussed a little bit the question of, is the p'tur based on Shalom Kederach? We mentioned the Tosefta Shabbos that says when you carry something Muktzah on Shabbos, if you carry it with two hands when you can carry it with one hand, that's called Tiltum and Hatzal, that's the p'tur in Hachos Muktzah. And others, which is the Sefer Das Torah, say, well, that could be true in Hachos Muktzah, but it wouldn't be true in a Malacha if you're going to carry two things, you're going to carry one thing with two hands. You're not going to be pater for that because we're not going to call it Shalom Kederach. The p'tur of Shnayim Shalasol only applies when you actually have two people doing it. And so we discussed a little bit about that. We talked about various svekas that come up at the Achrona Mask. First of all, does this mean that it's Mutter Min HaTorah? Maybe it's Asr Min HaTorah, but there's no Chiyuv Karban. The Pasuk especially is talking specifically about a Karban. And that affects also the question of if there is still an Isser, so maybe it's not going to help, let's say, on Yontif. On Yontif, you have the Isser Malacha without the Chiyuv Karban, so maybe on Yontif it doesn't help to have Shnayim Shaso. And the question is also asked about the other mitzvahs in the Torah. The question was asked by the Sefer Simchas Yontif, what if the person you're dealing with is not Chayiv in mitzvahs, if it's a non-Jew or if it's a child? So then that would seem to also affect the issue of, is it a p'tur based on we don't know who to assign the Chayiv to, or is it a p'tur based on the idea that it's not considered to be a normal meister, which it still would be the case if you're dealing with somebody who's not Chayiv in mitzvahs. We discussed the position of the Chesed Avram, who said that the whole idea only applies to malachos that have either a shear or some kind of a process going on. But if the malacha happens instantly and is not divisible in any way, so then there's no exemption of Shayim Shalasol. And we discussed in that context the question some folks can have, and should it help, let's say if you have a phone call to make to Pikuach Nefesh, does it help if you have two people pick up the receiver at once? So some suggest, based on this, that no, it doesn't work by every malacha. It only works by malacha that's somehow divisible, and the malacha of using electrical appliances is not divisible in any way, so the whole exemption of Shnayim Shaasol is not going to apply in that context. That's the whole discussion. In general, you don't find so much that this is one of the recommendations we have when we try to reduce Yisurim for Pikuach Nefesh purposes. So it's a debate whether or not Shnayim Shaasol is really invoked as an Eitzah in order to make things better. Hi.
Being Mavir of a Dalet Amos, and you have two people lifting an object, so why would that be different than two people lifting the phone?
Because the Malacha is defined as Dalet Amos for Shasar Avim, so that itself is a Shir. And you have Akira and you have Hanachi, you have all kinds of ways to divide it. And also, there's an object, there's every kind of a Shir in that sense. The Dalet Amos, the Akira, and the Hanachi,
on the size of the item.
Do we say you don't necessarily have a kira anacha of mavir del anamas?
Well, we said yesterday that you have to have a kira anacha, but that it has a lower role with mavir del anamas. Maybe it doesn't have to be in the b'shus harabim, or it doesn't have to be with intention to do that, but you definitely need a kira anacha. So, in any event, so then we mentioned also Rav Shechter's understanding about this, where he, in his Eretz HaTzvi, so he focuses on the fact that the Pasuk is about the Karbanos, it's not about Shabbos, so how does it get applied to Shabbos? So he understands that the idea is, the Torah is telling you that it's not called a Maisa when it's shared by two people, and therefore if it's not called a Maisa, so that's specifically an issue in Hilchos Shabbos, as we've been discussing. If you don't have a Maisa, then you don't have a... So you don't have the chiyuv, you don't even have the isser of malacha. So based on that, he says it's completely mutter min ha-Torah. There's no isser min ha-Torah at all. And it applies to yontif also. But it doesn't apply to mitzvot. So that's a question that some of the svarim talk about. You could be mekayim a mitzvah with shnayim shaso. And he says this also affects the question of what is the nature of the isser derabanan. That there are different kinds of isser derabanans in Shabbos. So sometimes you have an issur that's a gzeira, that you shouldn't come to do something, and sometimes you have what's called a malacha d'rabbanan. That's a more chamer issur d'rabbanan, that basically it's a malacha that is instituted by Chazal. I was discussing this with Rabbi Konigsberg yesterday, and he mentioned that his understanding of that is that Chazal, in that case, expanded the idea of tishbos. The Torah says we should be at rest, and so a malacha d'rabbanan means that's where Chazal said that this is also a occasion for shvisa. But in any case, so the question comes up, as Shafir has a whole essay about this, as to every issa d'rabbanan in Shabbos, is it a gzera or is it the more severe malacha d'rabbanan? So in this case, if you ask what kind of issa d'rabbanan is, shnayim shaso, and he's noted to believe that it can't be a malacha d'rabbanan because this chisaron, that it's not a maisa, that would be a chisaron in the very definition of a malacha. So not only is it a problem for it to be an issa d'oraisa, but even as a d'rabbanan, maybe it can't be a malacha d'rabbanan, it would have to be a gezeira d'rabbanan. So we said more about this, but in the interest of time, just giving as brief an overview as possible. Any questions about any of that? Any issues? Okay, so then we'll break here. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos Parah, and again,